Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive.
Hello, friends. It's weird. It feels like we haven't done this in so long. I think it's been a week and like 2 days. And I'm like, oh yeah. My God, we haven't been here in so long.
I know.
Weird like that sometimes.
It does time feel like strange. That. More time to watch horror movies though?
Yeah. Did you watch anything fun?
I watched one horror movie. Only one. I've been watching other movies, but I did get around to one horror. It's called Strange Darling. Have you heard of that one?
I feel like I have for some reason.
Okay. It's more of a recent, I don't know, it came out in the last couple of years and it had its like bright big flame for a moment. Like it had its moment and then it kind of like disappeared.
Okay.
but so yeah, I also knew, I knew like the name of the film. So I was like, okay, let me see what this is about. And it was actually so good. Like it was the type of good where I immediately went on YouTube and was like, Strange Darling reactions. Like I wanted to see people react to it. There wasn't honestly like that many reactions out there. I was surprised because it's like so well done. And it's like one of those subverts expectations horror movies.
It has a 96 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Hell yeah. I kind of just want to encourage everyone to watch it rather than talk about it at all. But I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I feel the same way about the movie that I watched this week, which is Bring Her Back, which of course is like a big deal right now, made by the same people who created Talk to Me. And it's, I don't want to talk about it too much because I think everyone should watch it. But it is one of those films where like a lot of people, I don't think there's like a ton of people who hate it, but there's a ton of people who are like, I will never watch that ever again. And like a lot of people commented on my video, like, thanks for posting this. Sorry you had to go through this because it's just one of those movies.
Oh, man.
It's very much like immediately you can tell like, oh, this is A24.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Okay. Do you have a preference of what you enjoyed more between Talk to Me and Bring Her Back?
I think I'm going to have to wait and see. I think it's Bring Her Back, but
wow.
I loved Talk to Me right when I watched it. And then like within 2 weeks, I was already like, actually, I don't think I liked that movie as much as I thought I did, which happens to me all the time.
That doesn't happen to me all the time, but I kind of had the same experience with Talk to Me where it felt like fun in the moment.
Yeah.
But then it didn't feel like anything too special looking back on it.
It didn't feel like it had as much substance as like initially I thought it did. Whereas Bring Her Back to Me, I don't want to like put it on this pedestal, but it has this energy that reminds me of Hereditary. So like that kind of a vibe in it. It's really stuck with me and I continue to think about it a lot. But everyone should watch that. Just be warned. Like it's a very heavy movie. So just a heads up.
So many movies I want to watch. They're stacking up. I also became aware of the movie Weapons this past week. Have you heard or seen Weapons?
I don't think so.
Oh my God, let me tell you. Let me tell you something.
Okay.
So, same creators as Barbarian.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dear.
And it's coming to theaters like literally in a week or this week maybe.
Oh.
It's getting a theatrical release. And I'm going to read you the synopsis right now.
Oh,
and
God.
I need you to know that this is apparently based off of true events or like. The synopsis is like, it's I'm sure it's a very, very loosely based situation based on what I'm about to read here. But the fact that it's based off of anything real is insane to me.
Okay.
When all but one child from the same class mysteriously vanish on the same night at exactly
I think I've seen the trailer. Yes.
You saw the trailer?
I think the trailer like started when I was watching a YouTube video and I got sucked in, but then I skipped it.
Oh my God. Even the trailer sucked too. Like, it doesn't it sound so... Okay, so yeah, everyone vanishes in the same class, same night, same time, except one kid. And it's just like, oh, what the fuck is happening situation. I don't know if they're going to like find the kids. I'm very intrigued. Like, what do you mean that's based off of something real? What do you mean?
Yeah, right. What? That's actually a great question. Like, what do you mean? That's weird.
Yeah. So I'm so hyped about that. Me and my sister have plans to go see it in the theaters because I have a freaking movie theater membership and I have like 6 credits right now and I need to start using them.
Is that considered a horror film?
Horror mystery.
Horror mysteries are.
Yes.
That's a good combo. Yeah. I love me a horror mystery.
It sounds like plot wise, it might be more mystery, but I think like the way, like cinematography wise, maybe that's where you'll get the horror. So.
You know what? I got to watch that one. That sounds.
Yes.
That sounds fun. Well, today we are watching a movie that I have. We're not watching a movie, actually. We're not watching one. That's not how podcasts work. Today we're talking about a movie that I have not shut up about for too long.
You were so excited about it. Are you still excited?
Listen, I watched it. It is a movie, believe it or not. Weren't we talking about Companion and the Monkey around the same time? And we did Companion like 16 years ago. Yeah. That's crazy.
I mean, it took way longer for the Monkey to get to streaming, didn't it? I think.
Yeah. The Monkey isn't even on streaming for another week. That's right. I actually did buy it because I wasn't sure how long I was going to need it. But you can like rent it for $6 right now. But it's going to be on Hulu, I think, August 6th. And it's still July right now. So
I'll be there.
You'll be there. Well, will you? So the fun thing. Okay. So in case you didn't know, the Monkey is based on a Stephen King short, which is part of why I was so excited about it. Not because I've read it, but just, I don't know, I just love Stephen King. I think his horror is so just like wacky and out there sometimes. The movie was directed and written by Osgood Perkins, who you probably have heard of.
As in the son of Anthony Perkins, the actor who plays Norman Bates in Psycho?
Maybe.
I think that's him. I think that's him.
That would make sense. He directed Long Legs and The Black Coat's Daughter.
Yes, that's him.
Oh my God. Okay, so yes. Wow, I didn't know this, but would you look at that? So yeah, so he directed it. And then it's also, I know this doesn't mean much, but James Wan is a producer on it. So, you know, it's got like a good combo of people going for it.
Yeah.
And this movie came out a little earlier this year. It is very much listed as a horror comedy.
Which you have been getting more into lately.
I have. This is true. I'm starting to understand the genre a little bit more. I think a lot of the time, the comedy just doesn't, it's not my comedy because I like dry comedy, like The Office kind of comedy, which is not horror comedy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a horror comedy movie called The Monkey. And we're gonna get into it.
Okay. I just, I know nothing about this movie. Like I have no idea what, I'm ready, question mark.
This film opens up in a pawn shop. It is filled with a lot of interesting items such as knives, like a skull of I don't know what, but there's a skull. Also a lot of crap because, you know, it's a pawn shop. And it's dimly lit by fluorescent lights, some neon signs. It's kind of vibey. It's late at night. And the bell at the front door rings. So someone's here and a man walks in wearing what looks like a captain uniform. I found out later it is a pilot captain's uniform. Mm-hmm. And he is carrying a decently large toy monkey. And this man, by the way, is Adam Scott, which I got so excited about. I was like, oh my God.
I had no idea he was in this movie. I don't know anyone that's in this movie, actually. I just know the poster.
Oh my God. Well, so the monkey's on the poster, right?
Yeah, so it's like a bit, it's like, well, I can't tell if it's a stuffed animal. Like, is it fluffy in the middle or is it like solid? Because I know it's furry, obviously.
It's not a stuffed animal. It's definitely like a solid thing covered with fur.
Right, okay.
And it's pretty large. It's larger than I thought. Like, you can use two arms to kind of carry it. And he has large eyes. He's got like a very exaggerated animated face.
Yeah.
And he has a drum in his lap. And he holds drumsticks in his two hands. That's kind of
the vibe.
It's
giving like animatronic.
Yes. That is kind of the vibe. Exactly that. Okay. The interesting thing, and I haven't looked into this, I do want to read the short story, but I'm pretty sure the short story version is a monkey with cymbals as opposed to a drum. So I'm not sure why they changed that. Again, I haven't read the short story, but if anyone knows, feel free to talk about it on Discord. So Adam Scott walks over to the pawn shop counter where nobody is standing. So he begins to ring the bell very rapidly to call for someone's attention. And a man slowly emerges from the back room, pulling on his glasses to see what all this fuss is about. Mm-hmm. He looks at Adam Scott and he says, you know, you've got a fair amount of blood on you, sir.
Oh.
And yeah, I this is the first time I see this. And he looks down at his shirts and it's covered in blood. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's not even mine. It was just, and then he cuts himself off and is like, ah, never mind. It's like, oh, okay. Sure. Adam Scott's here covered in blood and holding a monkey and everything's fine. He goes on to say, I need you to take this thing off my hands and make it someone else's problem, in reference mm-hmm. to the monkey. The man looks at Adam Scott and just gestures to a sign behind him that says, no returns on children's toys.
Oh.
Adam is sure to correct him, saying, it's not a toy. Please don't ever call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And the man's like, well, besides, it appears to be broken. And he gestures to the monkey and points out that its right arm seems to be stuck in the upward position. So it's like holding the drumstick in the air, okay, as if it's getting ready, you know, hit that drum. Adam quickly, I'm going to call him Adam because just
no, yeah,
me.
That's fine.
Adam quickly butts in to be like, you do not want the goddamn drumstick to come down, because when it does, I promise you, we are all fucked to hell. And it is at this exact moment that the monkey begins to play some music, circus music.
Oh,
and
no.
Raises the arm and then starts banging on the drum back and forth. So Adam kind of backs away. He's like, oh shit, the monkey's playing a tune. And he mm-hmm. peers around the shop, and then the monkey just like stops and it's silent. Shop owners look at him like, are you good? Like, what's going on? And then he finally breaks that silence by saying, well, sir, can't speak for you, but I don't feel especially fucked to hell. Next thing we know, we see yep. a rat.
I'm like, you can't be saying shit like that. You're about to die now.
Exactly. We see a rat gnawing on a taut rope on a shelf.
Oh.
Now, in a very Final Destination-like style,
okay. Yeah.
The rope breaks, causes something to fall on this mannequin figure holding a gun arrow thing. And uh-huh. the arrow launches across the shop and pierces the shop owner straight through the stomach. Now, this is one of those guns. I don't know what they're called, but you know, like the gun that shoots an arrow, but the rope stays attached to the arrow.
Yes.
Yes. This is one
I don't know
of those.
Why I immediately knew what you were talking about. That was weird. But
yeah,
for some reason, I don't think I even had that. Yeah, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Weird.
Yeah. Okay. Like, what is that? I don't know. But anyway, this goes through his stomach into the wall behind him, and they just kind of stand there looking at each other for a moment. And the monkey's been sitting there with one of its arms still raised, and it just brings that arm down and hits the drum one final time as the rope retracts back into the gun, pulling the arrow out of the guy's stomach. But it doesn't just pull the arrow out of his stomach. It pulls the arrow out of his stomach with his intestines attached to it so that they pull out in like a straight line through this one hole in his stomach, like, and just go across the shop.
Oh my God, limbo time.
We could do limbo with the intestines.
Could do limbo. It could be fun.
Yeah, just don't touch them. As long as we don't touch them, which I guess is the point of the game, so it's fine. And this man, believe it or not, he does fall to the ground dead.
He
does
yeah.
die. So
that'll do it.
That will do it, right? So Adam Scott's standing there, and he's looking around the room when his eyes land upon a flamethrower for sale. And he just lets out, hot dog, because of course he does.
He could say anything and sell it. Like, anything really could come out of that man's mouth. And I'm like, it feels right.
I know. I didn't know much about him till Severance, and now I'm obsessed with him. But, you know, whatever. So we make a quick cut to outside, right? Where Adam Scott is wielding a flamethrower and screaming, who's smiling now, you infernal son of a whore? And he lets out some battle cries as he directs the flamethrower at the monkey, whose face melts away.
Okay.
Then the image and the sound halt as though someone's just like paused the film, right?
Oh no. And that's giving me trauma flashbacks to Funny Games.
Oh my God,
like
right?
The literal pause and rewind.
Yeah, no. Okay. So a voiceover makes its way in now saying, I don't know if every father passes some secret horror onto his kids, but mine sure did. The title screen for The Monkey pops up on screen as some fun music plays. And as we come back into the film, we land on the face of a child, probably middle school, and the voiceover continues. My name is Hal Shelbourne. This is me and my twin brother, Bill. So, you know, we cut out to see these two boys sitting on the hood of a car. And I'll be honest, at first, I didn't realize that these were two boys were actually played by the same person the entire time I watched the movie. I did not realize it. Like, this kid's a good actor that, like, I didn't even
That's amazing. I'm surprised they like still do that, because I feel like it's so much easier to find, like, it's more accessible now to find good actors than I bet, especially twins. So the fact that this kid is just so good that they're like, we're going to take the time to go through the whole thing where we double you.
Yeah.
That's good. It's
really impressive. So Hal's like kind of looks more like a nerdy kid. He's got glasses, and his brother Bill's looks like a little bit more of a sporty kid, shaggy hair. That's kind of their biggest difference. And we learn from Hal via voiceover. Now this first, I'll be honest, the first like 30 minutes of the movie has a lot of voiceover in it. So I will be just kind of summarizing a lot of what he says.
Yeah.
So we learn from him that this is the two of them before everything went down. We also learn that his brother Bill's kind of an ass. He refers to him as the kind of guy who would say shake on it, but then pull his hand back and pretend to slick his hair. Some text pops up on the screen to let us know that we are now in the year of 1999.
Okay.
Hal continues, Bill was older than me by 3 minutes and ate most of our mom's placenta, which made him the big brother.
Babies do that, I think.
I didn't know that. And I was like, what?
So. Yeah.
That's wild.
I don't know how common it is, but I have heard that before and it really freaks me out.
Yeah.
Babies kind of freak me out in general. I can't lie.
Well, that's true. They just like the fact that they just become a human in there, and then I don't like to think about that too much.
No, me either.
It's horrifying.
Freaks me out. Yeah.
So this big brother role that Bill had was something he took very seriously, and he basically just treated Hal like shit whenever he got the chance. And we see a shot of the two boys standing in front of a bathroom mirror brushing their teeth, and Bill spits out his toothpaste and turns to Hal and says, I've been meaning to tell you. Mom says she hates you because you made Dad leave, and now she has to go on dates.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
This is a beautiful relationship that we have going here.
Like, really cute twin relationship.
Yeah, the brotherly bond.
Is so there.
Mm-hmm.
So older Hal continues on to say that he still managed to love his brother, even though sometimes he fantasized about being an only child. And we then see young Hal holding a bowling ball over his brother's head in bed as he sleeps. And he says, I hate you, Bill Shelbourne. The bowling ball falls from his hands and smashes Bill's face, squishing it into his bed. But then we quickly cut back to see young Hal still holding the bowling ball like over his face. Like that's like his fantasy. Just dropping the ball on his brother's head.
Just murderous fantasies. So it's okay. That means it's okay.
Yeah, like as long as we don't actually do it, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
So he tells us about his mother now and how she raised the boys on her own for as long as she could, at least. And the two boys sit in a parked car with their mother, Bill in the front, of course, Hal in the back. And their mother says that, you know, your father left for a pack of cigarettes and never came back. Just made like an egg and scrambled. Now, their father, which you are supposed to understand at this point, is Adam Scott.
Okay.
Which is just something that I feel like I should say in case it's not obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Also, made like an egg and scrambled. I feel like I've never heard that before, but it's kind of good. I'm not going to lie.
I like it. Yeah.
I kind of like it. So she tells them how he used to bring all kinds of knickknacks. Their father used to bring all kinds of knickknacks and garbage back to the house that he would just shove in a closet, and it's all still there. So one day it will be theirs. So naturally, next shot we see is Bill and Hal heading into their dad's closet. Voiceover Hal tells us that to them, his dad's closet was full of clues to who he was, and so he and Bill are fascinated by it. The boys begin to pull boxes out of the closet and look through their father's stuff. Hal drags out a Tiffany blue round box, and Bill wants to know what he's looking at, so he tells him that the box says organ grinder monkey on the top. In quotes underneath that title is, like life.
If I was just, because listen, we all snooped as children, right? I definitely like snooped my way like through my mom's closet, mostly to like find cute dresses and stuff. So a little different, I guess. But if I found a box, an organ grinder monkey box, I think I would probably ask, hey, mom, what's this? I think I would need an answer immediately. I'm guessing they don't get an answer immediately.
Well, Hal just removes the cover of the box.
I'd be too scared. I'd be too scared. That label, I'd be like, what the hell? I'd go to my mom right away. Okay.
So Hal removes the cover of the box, and perfectly pristine inside is, of course, the monkey.
This has got to be a huge box.
It is a big, like, it's like a, imagine like a big hat box, you know, like those, that's kind of what it's like. So he reaches into the box, pulls out the monkey, and Bill's like, hey, hands it over. So he does. And Hal turns over the box to see a sticker on the bottom saying, turn the key and see what happens. Bill gestures to the turnkey on the back of the monkey saying, do you think it does shit if I turn this? Hal tells him, don't do it. It's dad's. Like, we shouldn't touch it.
It says organ grinder monkey. No, don't turn the key. What do you mean? I watched Jumanji as a kid. I would not.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Bill hits him back with, dad's gone, fuckface, and I'm his next of kin. So legally, everything in here is mine.
Mm-hmm.
Bill turns the key. At first, nothing happens. And then suddenly, the monkey's lips widen, revealing its teeth, so that it has like a big goofy grin. So like it's like, because it kind of has this smile, right? But then like its lips just kind of retract and show its teeth, and it's like super weird.
Yeah.
But the monkey brings up its right arm with a drumstick, and the drumstick actually twirls in its hand.
Oh.
But then nothing happens. Bill throws the monkey back at Hal saying, it's broken anyway, and he just goes back upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, or maybe a few days later, it's hard to tell where these time cuts are, we see the boys heading out to the car with a girl who's maybe like in her 20s. It's hard to tell. Mm-hmm. And the mom makes a comment to herself under her breath that she doesn't want to have to go on any more blind dates, but it seems that that's what she's doing tonight. So she is sending the boys off with their babysitter, Annie.
Okay.
Hal slides open the back door to the van, and he sees that the monkey is sitting in one of the back seats of the car.
No. No, what do you mean? It's time to run it over.
It's great because he looks uneasy, but he also doesn't say anything, and he just gets in the back of the car and sits in the other seat.
Oh, sure. Okay, we're getting into a car accident.
Yeah. No, it's like, it's so crazy to me that he literally opens the door and looks at the monkey and then just sits down next to it. I'm like, what?
Speak up.
Speak up. Sorry, I'm not going to sing Conan Gray right now. Annie looks at the two boys and says, I've only got one rule for tonight. Keep your hands off the hot part of the table. And I'm not going to lie, at first I was like, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
What do you mean? But then we cut to a hibachi restaurant. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh,
I see.
Have you ever done that?
I have. Honestly, I probably can't eat there anymore. But that food is like so good.
The food is so good. The experience, I wanted to crawl in a hole.
No, like, same. Don't throw food in my face, please.
Yeah. They made me get up and like go and put on the chef hat.
Oh,
and
my God, no.
then fling the food into my stepdad's mouth.
I would have left.
I was so – I had to go with it because, like, it's weird if you're weird. So I was like, haha.
I know.
But then
on
the inside, I was so – oh, my God. And then my family was dying laughing because they knew, like, going into it that I was nervous. I'm like, I hope they don't make me do anything. And then I was, like, doing that. And they were all just laughing because they knew I was hating it. Oh, anyways, I'm sure that their experience was really good.
Yeah. No, it's like that – you saying all of that, like, just that's traumatizing to me. No, thank you. But yeah, no, they're a hibachi. And inside, we see the chef preparing some rice on the hot stove in front of the boys and their babysitter. And they kind of look like, you know, they're having a fun time watching him do his stuff. And then we cut back outside to the van and we look at the seat where the monkey had been sitting, and it's gone now. Oh, wait, good. No, it's not gone, actually. It's just sitting in the driver's seat. The car now.
Oh, he wants to drive. Oh my God, chauffeur, this is so kind.
I know. He's like, I'll pick him up when they're done.
Yeah.
Like, I'll pick him up at the door.
Perfect.
So we're cutting back and forth, like inside and outside. Like, look at the monkey, look at the restaurant, look at the monkey, blah, blah, blah. And Annie, inside, she's kind of making eyes with the chef. They're like looking back and forth at one another.
Okay.
And then, I know, a little flirty moment. The chef makes a heart out of the rice. And then he, like, puts the spatula under the heart and lifts it slowly to make it look like it's beating. And
okay, I know. You know what? He would have had me.
You like, think so?
That would have gotten me. If I was, like, if I was, like, college age and a man was making a beating heart of rice for me, I'd be like, yes. Well, yes.
Yes, here's my number. Like, take me out right now. We cut back to the monkey, and it begins to play its drums as circus music plays. We cut back and forth again, blah, 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 blah. And suddenly the music stops playing. And back in the restaurant, the chef has done some like wild motion and we hear a slicing sound and then everything goes silent. Annie sits perfectly still as a thin red line begins to form across her throat.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. And the boys and the chef like look at her uncomfortably and like it's just like this slow, uncomfortable moment. Annie turns to look at Hal as her head begins to slowly slide off of her neck before completely falling off and onto the stove in the middle of the table.
Okay, okay. So, yes, my hibachi experience was not so bad.
I think I would take yours over this one.
I think so. Oh, my God. That is so traumatizing for those kids. Oh, my God. And the chef. Like, imagine.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Imagine. I can't.
I love how we're like, oh, my God, imagine if we decapitated someone. That'd be crazy. Oh, my God. Imagine. Like, yeah, that might be traumatizing.
I would have to decapitate myself after that. Like, how can you move on? I can't just decapitate someone and live the rest of my life. Like, the trauma would be crazy.
Trauma goes wild. No, you're not wrong. I mean, this is not something I think about every day, but you might be right. So some people, like, scream as Bill lets out, like, a holy sh- before, like, it cuts him off. We cut straight to a portrait of Annie at her funeral.
Mm.
And now this scene's so weird because it's, like, a whole comedic bit that just, like, didn't work for me. So, like, I didn't even put the whole thing in here.
Sure.
Because there's this priest comes up to the podium, and he's clearly never done, like, a funeral before. He's this young kid, and the whole scene's super awkward. He's, like, stumbling through – like it's just weird. He's stumbling through the whole thing.
Just kind of sad.
I know. Like, he doesn't seem to care much, nor know what he's talking about. It's whatever. But after the ceremony, the two boys sit with their mother in a graveyard eating ice cream cones as she tries to explain to them death, the meaning of life, whatever it is that she's trying to say.
Yeah.
It goes a little something like this.
Oh, okay.
Everything is an accident, or nothing is an accident. It's not if or even how, it's only when. Everybody dies, and that's life. I'll die. You will both die. All of your friends and their parents and all of their pets and everybody. Some of us peacefully in our sleep. Some of us horribly, violently, tied up with clothesline and screaming through duct tape over our mouth and all that jazz. This is how she explains death to her middle school children, which, you know, everyone's got different parenting methods. So I guess.
No, now as the child, I would also be decapitating myself after that information.
She's like, yeah, you'll die. I'll die. Your friends will die. Their parents, their pets.
Jeez.
And some of us are going to die by murder.
Did you ever get like the death talk, like in an official way? No, me either. I didn't get any type of official talk. I just kind of figured everything out.
Oh, I never had an official talk. One time my mom tried to have a talk with me and I shut her down so fast. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to talk about that. She was like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like, no. And then I wondered why I didn't understand things.
Yeah,
like,
right?
I was like, I don't want, mom, that's weird. I don't want to talk about that.
Like, yeah.
Girly.
I mean, and maybe they shouldn't have in this situation. Maybe there's something to like just not speaking about things between parents. Maybe we just shouldn't speak to each other at all, actually.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe we should all just go about our day and pretend nothing's happening. Yeah. That sounds good to me. So she finishes this whole like spiel by saying, let's go dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Back at home, the boys and their mother dance around the living room to Rip It Up by Little Richard. And narrator Hal shows up again to tell us that it may have been the day of the funeral, but it might have been the best day of my life. Funny how quick things can change. So he says this as we see young Hal walking through the hallways at school and into a locker room. When Hal gets in there, there's a bunch of girls in there waiting for him, like probably like 7 girls. And this next dialogue, it was written in a script. So basically these girls start pressing Hal about the fact that his dad left his mom. And now his mom has to wear the pants in the family. But only one person can wear the pants in the family, right? And Hal's currently wearing pants, so it looks like he might have a bit of a pants problem. And the next shot is of him walking into his house in only his boxers.
So they stole his
pants. They stole his pants for some reason.
This is still, like, in 99?
Yes.
I was going to say, I guess bullies were different back then, and people like put up more of a fuss when like relationships between parents didn't work out. Mm-hmm. But that still is just like stupid. Like what that like sick burn.
Yeah, like I'll be honest, like I don't know, again, so this is a horror comedy and it's supposed to be comedic. A lot of the comedy didn't necessarily like work super well for me in this movie, but
got it,
you know, like I don't know, maybe it was funny, I just didn't get it. And I was like okay, what? So yeah. Of course Hal, like, he's had a bad day, so he heads straight down to his room and sits on his bed. He looks over at his dresser where the monkey stares at him, and we get one of those dramatic stingers to be like, ooh, the monkey, you know, like when it's turner, you know, and it's supposed to be like it's supposed to be over the top and goofy, and
yeah,
this movie doesn't take itself too seriously, and I can credit it for that. Like, at least it doesn't,
that's good,
it knows it's silly, so it's fine. Yeah. Hal looks at the monkey, and then he calls up to his mom to be like, did you put the monkey in my room? But of course she says that she didn't do that. Mm-hmm. So we do a time cut to later that night. It seems that Hal's having a hard time falling asleep while Bill is sleeping soundly in the twin bed next to him. Hal gets up and he goes over to the monkey to examine it a little closer. Mm-hmm. He starts talking to it and asking it if it had anything to do with the babysitter. Like, did the monkey do something?
Okay.
And somehow, I guess this wakes Bill up because he suddenly interrupts from behind and says, yo, you really got the hots for that thing, huh? Hal, of course, is like stuttering. He's like, no, I don't. And Bill's like, no, it's okay. You can have it. All you got to do is say you want to marry it. And Hal hits him back with, well, I don't want to marry it. Bill's like, no. Say, I want to be Mrs. Stupid Monkey. And for some reason, Hal immediately gives in and just is like, I want to be Mrs. Stupid Monkey. I don't want to use the word pathetic, but like, oh my God, like he can't.
Yeah, it's stand like up he's for himself. Been molded into a pushover for some reason. Yeah. Probably like I do feel bad. Yeah, it's clearly like a product of environment situation.
Exactly. Like his brother is just like so horrible to him that this is just like his life.
Which, side note, like I get what you mean, how cool it is, like how different these two personalities are being played by the same actor is cool.
Exactly. And like the fact that I truly did not realize it was the same kid until
amazing.
Looked at the cast list. I was like, oh my God, like that's a lot of talent for a small child.
Yeah.
So at the end of this whole ordeal, Bill is like, okay, you can have the monkey. And he puts his hand out as if he's going to shake on it. But Hal does not reach his hand out because he knows what his brother's about to do. And even though Hal doesn't reach out to shake his hand, Bill still does the thing where he like pulls it away and slicks his hair back. And he's like, idiot. Even though, like,
he didn't even fall for it.
He didn't even fall for it. So at school the next day, Hal's in class and they seem to be watching a movie about boys changing bodies. Mm-hmm. And Hal looks down into his backpack and sees that the monkey is in his backpack. It's just in there because of course it is. And just
okay, what is the deal with the size of this monkey?
I'm guessing they took it apart to put it in the backpack.
Okay.
You can see the head, but it doesn't really make like it shouldn't fit in there.
Okay, so I should just let that go. Like, it is big, but when it can fit into, like, Mary Poppins bags, like, just accept it.
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. Because I was like, that shouldn't fit. Yeah, they clearly took it apart and, like, just put the head in there.
Okay.
So just as he looks down into his backpack, one of the girls screams out, hey, Hal is jerking his monkey under the desk. These kids are horrible.
Like, people don't talk – again, maybe in 99 it was different, but people do not talk like this. Like middle school kids do not – like we talk like kids in middle school, especially in class.
I don't know if like I just was like privileged enough to not experience this, but like I just feel like in movies bullying is like so exaggerated.
Yeah.
And like I know some people are probably going to be like, girl, you just got lucky. And I think maybe that's true. But like whenever I see the bullying in the movies, I'm like, there's no way. Yeah. Do kids actually act like this? So of course, like when this girl screams this out, the whole class erupts in laughter. And the next thing we know, we're in the gym and Hal's sitting on the bleachers talking to some other kid when those bully girls and his brother come walking into the gym carrying crates of bananas. And the next shot is of Hal now walking into the house again, but this time he's covered in banana mush.
What is going on?
I know.
What is going on? Honestly, exactly. If anything, please tell us if anything crazy happened at your high school, middle school, that is like up to par, like movie level up to par, let me know, because yeah. I only see this shit in the movies.
Same.
I never hear about something like this.
Right. So again, Hal heads directly down to his room, and this time the monkey's sitting right on his bed. And he's like really mad now. So he heads straight over to the monkey and starts scolding it, saying that this is all his fault. Mm-hmm. The monkey is the reason why Bill is doing all this stuff to him, he says. You know, Bill, the one who lives in this room with me sometimes, I wish he was dead. And then he turns the key.
Uh-oh.
The monkey lifts up its right hand, spins its drumstick, and then we get a shot of Bill walking in the front door upstairs. Bill comes into the entryway and calls out to his mother asking if dinner is ready, but he gets no response. Downstairs, the monkey starts doing its thing, playing the drum, playing the music. Mm-hmm. And Bill heads into the kitchen upstairs where his mother stands at the counter facing away from him. She begins to make some gasping sounds and her body starts twitching. She turns around and looks at Bill and we see that some blood is dripping down the side of her head. And at first it's hard to tell like where the blood's coming from, but then it seems like maybe it's like coming out of her ears, but it's very comical. Like it's pouring out like almost as if it's like a faucet, you know?
Okay. Okay.
Kind of like the blood's just kind of like spewing out. We then get a close-up of the monkey's face as he brings down the final drum beat and the mother spasms and falls to the ground. She hits her head on the counter and the screen cuts to black. For a moment we have silence, but then organ music comes in and we are now at her funeral.
At another funeral.
Yes.
Oh my god. That's weird. He asked the monkey to basically to kill Bill.
Mm-hmm.
It killed the mom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I trusted the monkey to, like, follow the rules.
I know. I guess maybe that shouldn't be shocking to us.
Yeah.
But the voiceover Hal tells us that his mom had a boomerang aneurysm, something that had a 1 in 44 million chance of happening.
Oh, my God.
Hal was the only one who truly knew what happened.
Right.
In regards to the monkey. Then he explains to us what we pretty much already know. He says, you turn the key, the drumsticks go up. They come down when it chooses who it wants to kill next, and it kills who it wants when it feels like it, and it doesn't give you an explanation.
Right.
And that's that. That's the monkey.
So maybe what if we just didn't turn the key?
That's like a good idea, actually. Oh my God. Hold on. Maybe she has something. I will say this movie, like, because it's based off a short story, and I don't know how short the story is, but, like, you can tell that this is a short story.
Just they're, by like, stretching it out.
The premise. Like, it's like, yeah, that makes sense for a short story.
Yeah.
After the ceremony, we're back at home with Uncle Chip and Aunt Ida. They're going to be our new guardians now that, well, we no longer have parents. So Chip sits on the stairs with Bill, and he tells him that, you know, we never wanted kids, so we don't really know what we're doing, but we're going to do our best. But it's our best is probably just going to be really bad.
Okay, great.
You know, these kids are in great hands. It's going to go super well for them.
Clearly.
Later that night, Hal lays in bed awake as once again, Bill is sound asleep next to him. Hal removes the covers of his bed to reveal that he's still wearing his suit from the funeral and he's holding a cleaver in his hands. So it seems like Hal's in like a basement or a garage because he's now at a workbench and he places the monkey on the workbench and pulls the cleaver up. When he brings it down, he cuts off the arm of the monkey.
Ooh.
But the weird thing is there's like actually like gooey blood inside this monkey.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd burn it. I just burn like... set it on fire.
It's gross, but Hal doesn't stop there, though. He just hacks the crap out of this thing.
Okay, good, yeah.
And then he brings his arm up for one last hack, and as his arm comes down, we cut to black. And this is our first score check-in.
Okay. I mean, as far as Annie and the mom, I'm a 0%.
Yeah.
It wills it to happen, and it happens. Like, the monkey wills it to happen, and, like, it's going to happen.
Right.
It seems like, with, like, the info that I have so far.
Yeah, it gives Final Destination energy a
lot. Oh, yeah. Obviously, if I'm putting ourselves, Hal is giving, like, main character right now, so, like, we're 100% if we're putting ourselves in Hal's shoes. But like as far as focusing on the deaths in this first act, I'm gonna have to go like it really just depends on how I want to like weigh the characters.
We can treat these as discussions and then have a larger survivability discussion at the end if you would like, because this is a weird movie in that sense.
You know what, I'm just gonna go with a 10%.
Okay.
You know, and again, like last time, this doesn't technically mean it needs to factor into my final score, but just with what I know now.
I kind of just like threw a six on there because it's like, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see at the end, right? Voiceover Hal lets us know that he took those pieces of the monkey, and he put them in a garbage bag, made sure that bag made it onto a garbage truck, and he was sure that would be the last of it.
Okay. That's not like, I mean, in real life, that's a good move. In a horror movie, you know it's going to show back up, but like, I think that's good.
Yeah. I think he made the right decision there.
Yeah.
He tells us, though, that he and Bill were never the same after that. And their aunt and uncle decided to move them up to Maine, which, of course, because it's Stephen King, everything by Stephen King takes place in Maine.
Right.
So Hal, Bill, their aunt and uncle sit in a car as we drive into the town of Casco, Maine, and up to their new home. In their new room, Bill lays in bed, still in his suit from the funeral. Hal asks him if he's going to take it off, and he replies with, "If I take it off, then I'll just have to put it back on as soon as there's another funeral. Mm-hmm. But if I don't take it off, then I won't have to put it back on, so there won't be any more funerals." Which is, like, so sad.
Yeah, exactly. It is just sad, but also, like, maybe, yeah, let's put it in the wash or something.
Yeah, not a bad idea. Later that evening, Bill sits in the living room watching a TV program when a light flickers out on the front porch. He goes up to the window to get a closer look. When he looks outside, he sees a faint image of the monkey's face staring back at him. He stands back up and turns around to see the monkey sitting on a table in the living room where he had been.
This is Hal or this is Bill?
This is Bill.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, this is Bill.
Okay.
We cut to Bill scolding Hal for bringing the monkey here. But of course, Hal insists that he didn't do it. He chopped it up. He'd gotten rid of it.
Right.
And this is when the boys realize that, like, there's something fishy here, something evil.
Oh my God. Bill, like, believes him?
Yes.
Oh, thank God. I hate that trope.
Yeah. I know. It's so common in horror that nobody believes you, but the two of them are both, like, on the same page. Like, something weird's happening.
Okay, cool.
So, Bill, you're going to love this.
Oh.
Bill suggests that, well, we should try it one more time to be sure, see if anyone else we know dies.
What? What do you
like,
mean?
Like, what?
Does Hal call him out on this and is like, what the fuck? We can't do that.
Yeah, no.
Or does he agree?
Hal goes, no way. Like, and then he says, what if it gets one of us? So he's more concerned about the
two of
them.
Oh, my God. Or what if you guys are responsible for the death of us? Anyone? What do you
Literally
mean?
Anybody. Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're like, oh, if it's like, if it's our uncle, like, maybe we could risk it. But, like, what if it gets us?
Yeah.
Hello? That's wild.
Insane for that. But like, oh no, when Hal goes like, oh, what if it gets one of us? Bill says, then I promise to pretend to be sad when you're dead. Just these two, like, their dynamic is wild.
Like, this energy they're giving right now is giving, like, they still think it's a prank.
Yeah.
But, like, people have literally been dying in super traumatic ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the energy's a little off, boys. Like, we should be a little more scared.
Mm-hmm. Maybe take this a little more seriously, but it's fine. It's fine. Bill then asks Hal if he thinks the monkey can kill the person who turns the key or not.
Mm.
And Hal, like, kind of stops and he's like, how should I know?
Mm-hmm.
Bill looks at Hal and says, I'm going to try it.
Oh, my God.
Hal immediately is like, don't, Bill. But he gets cut off by the sound of organ music and a portrait of Uncle Chip on the altar at his funeral.
Oh, my God. You're kidding. It is the uncle. the uncle.
Yes, the
that's
uncle.
Taking
uncle
care of
Chip.
Them. Yes. Oh, my God. They were okay with it being the uncle, right? Okay, well, what is their reaction? What is their reaction? Are they just like, man, that's crazy.
Well,
I guess it works.
Hold on. Wait, I don't remember where this is or if I wrote it. I don't think I wrote it, but I'll try to remember when I get there. They're at the funeral, right? And voiceover Hal comes back in to say it was a hunting accident, but not the usual kind. Uncle Chip was trampled by a stampede of 67 wild horses in his sleeping bag on a camping trip. We then do, in fact, see a sleeping bag with a body inside get trampled by many horses. And Hal tells us, when they dumped the body out, it looked like someone had drop kicked a cherry pie. Oh, and they show this. And it's like they literally open up the sleeping bag and it's literally just slop. It's so nasty looking. I'm like, oh, I didn't need that.
Oh my God. That's the type of shit though. I'm always wondering like what it is, like what they used. Like,
oh, I know for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if they actually used like a mushed up cherry pie.
Cherry pie.
That's what it looks like. It's crazy.
Oh my God.
So, okay, so this is where it is, right? So, like, Hal and Bill, they're walking through a big open field holding the monkey box wrapped in chains. And there is a line here where Bill says something to the effect of, like, Uncle Chip was an asshole anyway, so it's fine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane. But it's, like, it's very much the horror comedy yes. aspect.
And that's the thing. Like, it's hard. Like, you can't take anything in this movie seriously yeah. because it is super goofy. But you're still like, yeah. Oh,
that's no, it is crazy. This energy of the boys' like nonchalance about like what this monkey is doing is kind of funny to me. It's kind of working for me. It's wild.
So they walk up to a well and they toss the box with the monkey in it all chained up down the well as Bill talks about how they got to try and get rid of it before it falls into the wrong hands. It can't be destroyed, but maybe it can be contained. So voiceover Hal tells us that for a long time, it seemed like it worked. As we cut to a screen that says 25 years later.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's wild. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So 25 years of no monkey.
Mm-hmm. Again, I do feel like the short story aspect in this time yes. leap. Yeah.
Right? Exactly. I'm excited to read it. I'm excited to see how many pages it is because yeah. it's definitely giving short. At the same home that they had lived in 25 years earlier, Aunt Ida lays in bed asleep. She is suddenly awoken by the sound of circus music.
Oh, no.
She puts on her glasses, grabs her gun, and heads on downstairs. She makes her way around the house searching for the source of the sound, and at last she realizes that the music is coming from the basement. She flips on the light. And the music stops, but she heads down the stairs with her gun out in front of her. But the lights decide they don't want to work right now, so they go out, of course. Mm-hmm. And Aunt Ida is having a hard time seeing what's going on in the basement. So she's like, whatever. She heads, you know, goes to head back upstairs. But on her way back upstairs, one of the stairs collapses beneath her and she falls through the staircase. And it's like one of those slat staircases that like there's storage underneath kind of vibes.
Yes.
At first, everything is still. Until Aunt Ida pops back up, screaming, her face full of fishing hooks.
Do you know the amount of times my family, they're a fishing family
mm-hmm.
a lot? I'm not a fan of fishing. It's not my thing. But the amount of hooks that, like, my grandpas have received to, like, the face from the kids, like, teaching the kids.
Oh, my God.
Oh my God, it is one of those things that really, really like gets my skin crawling. So this image.
Oh yeah.
No, thank you.
And I have to say, like, obviously a hook to the face sounds horrible, but like
yeah.
more so for me, the thought of it being anywhere close to the eye is what freaks me out. Like, what if it accidentally hooks your eye, dude?
Yeah.
Like yeah. that's crazy. Oh, gross. Yeah. I don't think I'll ever go fishing just for the thought of that.
Yeah.
That's so
not horrifying. With kids, not with kids,
not with children. Nope, the children can stay over there. Please yeah. don't fall in, like, do your best. So in the bathroom upstairs, she starts pulling the hooks out of her face one by one, and her face is bleeding. She's kind of crying because, like, understandable, it hurts. Mm-hmm. She grabs some rubbing alcohol out of the medicine cabinet, begins to clean her wounds when she notices a funny smell. She follows the smell into the kitchen where she realizes that the stove is on, but like not in a way where the fire's coming out. It's just kind of like leaking
the
gas. Yeah. So in a moment of pure genius, Aunt Ida leans over the stove to get a better look at the burner that is leaking. We hear a click as fire shoots out of the burner and of course yeah. all over her face, which is covered in rubbing alcohol. Her head goes up in flames as she runs screaming and flailing out of the house out the front door. There's this, like, large potted plant at the bottom of the stairs that she steps in and, like, it attaches itself to her leg. And she keeps running down the lawn and runs directly into a for sale signpost. So her face, like, goes through it and, like, pierces its way through her head.
Okay. Again. Yeah, final destination.
Final destination. Like, they were like, God. Oh, that series is coming out with a new movie. Let's just take that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's much like the earlier scene, like it pauses and voice out over Hal comes back in and he says, I haven't seen the monkey since we threw it down the well, but it feels like only a matter of time before it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Aunt Ida. Yeah, she obviously, she's gone from that. So we cut to a man working behind a counter at what appears to be a grocery store and voice over Hal tells us that this is him today.
Okay.
So this is something you actually might know this because you said you didn't know anybody in this film. And I didn't know this man, and I shouldn't know this man. But this man's name is Theo James.
Now, yes, from Divergent.
Oh, see, I don't know that, but I do know.
Oh, and White Lotus.
Oh, I haven't seen these things.
Okay.
I just happen to know that our one of our lovely community members, her name is Tobe. She talks about.
Not the direct call out.
She talks about Theo James like it's her job. This is the first time that I got to meet Tobe's love, Theo James. So shout out to Tobe.
Yeah, yeah. If there are no Theo James supporters in the world, Tobe is dead.
That's absolutely 100% true. You find out that Hal has lost contact with Bill. He doesn't have any friends, and he does his best to stay away from his family in order to keep them safe in case the monkey comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Hal heads into the back room where a young man sits at a desk, and Hal tells him that he's got to head out early today to pick up his kid. This man, Dwayne, he's like, "You got a kid? Shit, man, that sucks. Does it live with you?"
It.
Dwayne is wild. He's also like vaping throughout this scene.
Oh my God,
I think he's the manager, though. I don't know. Hal's like, no, he doesn't, but I get to see him once a year, so I'm taking him to Horror Heaven, which, whatever that is, sign me up, right?
Yeah, I'm there.
Mm-hmm. Dwayne goes, "Once a year? Shit, man, that sucks." Like, this is his line. He uses it over and over again. He's like, "Your wife must be some sort of mega bitch." Hal's like, no, that was my idea. So the next thing we know, Hal's driving through a big fancy gate up to a big fancy house where he parks in the big fancy driveway. He pulls out a birthday card that says, "Have a stellar birthday" on the front, and it's got like a space picture on it. And he opens it up and changes the message that says, "Wishing you a happy belated birthday" to "Wishing you happy belated birthdays," which is kind of rough.
Hmm.
He then signs it, "Love, Hal." And then he goes, "Oh, shit." And he puts "dad" in parentheses after it.
Oh, my God.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's sad.
It's sad because, like, you know, like, he's doing it for the kid's safety, but
to save, like, yeah, to protect him.
Right. But it's still like, oof.
But the kid, obviously wouldn't understand that, which is why it's like, oh, man.
Right. Exactly. So inside, we immediately cut to this strange man sitting between Hal and what we can assume is his ex-wife. Mm-hmm. This man is holding both of their hands and excitedly talking about how the parental energy is being transferred from you to me, he says.
Oh.
He leans over and kisses the woman before getting up and heading to a desk across from where they'd been sitting. He gets kind of serious suddenly as he says, "Petey's been asking about you more and more, Hal, and it's breaking our hearts." Hal tells him that he cares a lot about Petey, but this man, Ted, interrupts to tell him that just now, when they were sitting on that couch together, he took his power. I was like, "Whoa, what? You took my power? What are you talking about? Like, you can't do that." And the wife cuts in to say that Ted is going to be legally adopting Petey, and at that time, it will no longer be necessary for Hal to see Petey anymore. Hal resists, of course, but the wife tells him that he should just go take this week with Petey, cherish these last moments that they're going to have together.
Wait a minute. So they said that now that Petey is getting a stepdad, he shouldn't need to see or interact at all with his real dad.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is the path that they're going down.
Well, I'm happy my mom didn't have that mindset because that would have fucked me up, and I'm sure it's gonna fuck this kid. Like, what do you mean? That's his dad. I mean, it's a whole other layer with the whole monkey situation.
And there's something I didn't really write in the script, but Ted is like an author of like parenting books. He like has all these parenting books like displayed on his desk and all that, and so like they keep referring to him
weird.
As an expert. Yeah.
Yeah, you're an expert in parenting and you're like, this is the right thing to do here. What? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Petey, a young teenage boy, suddenly appears and asks them what they're talking about. They all turn to look at him awkwardly before we just cut away from that scene. Our next scene opens on what looks to be like a fairly like desolate road in a field, but we realize that it's actually right outside on Ida's house. And a man with long dark hair and bangs walks into frame. He looks at a sign for an estate sale and heads toward the house, and it is Aunt Ida's house.
Mm-hmm.
The man walks up to the yard where people are rifling through things placed on tables, classic yard sale vibes, and he starts looking around at some random junk before landing upon the monkey. Mm-hmm. He picks it up and looks it over, and suddenly a flash plays in his mind, like an old VHS tape of a man dressed in what looks like a police uniform, but it kind of looks like a fake police uniform. I don't know. He's sitting weird on a bed. And then we suddenly, like, this is all very, like, quick cuts. So we suddenly cut to a living room where this man, Thrasher is his name, he sits on a couch with his mother. And she says, "What do you mean it reminds you of your father? Is it the shit-eating grin or the hairy back and arms?" There's another young man sitting in the living room with them, and his name is Beauchamps.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're getting into it. I don't know what's happening.
No, same. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Don't get too caught up on what's happening, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So this is Thrasher's brother, right? And Thrasher asks his mother if she ever wonders what happened to his father. And his mom seems like she could really not care less. She then asks Thrasher if he still plans on selling that monkey thing to that nut who never leaves his house. We cut to a car pulling up to a motel on a stormy night, and inside a room, Hal and Petey sit on separate twin-size beds, and Petey asks his father if he has any siblings as he fills in this family tree project that he's working on for school.
Oh my gosh, he doesn't even know that. That's wild. Yeah,
I know. Hal denies having any siblings at all, and so Petey's like, "You're an only child, just like me." And you can see a little bit of, like, regretful guilt creep across Hal's face at this. Mm-hmm. Like, because he's, like, relating to him. I guess they decide it's time for bed, because the next thing we know, they're both fast asleep in bed. And, oh my God, this part. Okay.
Oh, God.
No.
What?
So, listen, no, like, I don't even know why this scene exists, but, like, it does. Ugh. So, listen, we get a shot of the monkey's face close up, right? We see it raise its little arm into the air, twirl its drumstick, and bring it back down for a drum beat.
Yeah.
And then we're on, like, a wide shot of Hal in bed, and we see a giant monkey arm come and pick Hal up out of bed. And of course we realize, like, this is like some weird psychedelic dream, because Hal starts, like, floating down a hole with this kaleidoscope of colors and, like, shots of the monkey flashing around him. So he floats down this hole, right? And then he lands on the workbench table from when he was a kid, and his eyes are still closed, but when he opens them, a person in a suit wearing the monkey head stands over him with a cleaver, ready to chop him up. And Hal wakes up as soon as the first chop comes down. So that was a fun dream.
I feel like that wasn't in the short story, and they were just like, let's do this.
No, they really needed to fill time. They're like, psychedelic monkey dream. Here we go.
Yeah.
So Hal gets up, and he must be really warm, because he heads over to the thermostat, which says it's set on high. It is literally set at 90 degrees. So he turns it back down to 74, and the AC kicks on. We can see the air start flowing from the vent, because there's, like, a couple little ribbons tied to it, and we can see the air coming in, and we also see the AC unit on the roof, word of life. Mm-hmm. Hal jumps back into bed when his phone starts ringing, and the caller ID simply says, "unknown caller." Hal picks up the phone, and the voice on the other line says, "well, hello, dumb shit."
Oh.
It's Bill.
Yep.
So, naturally.
Naturally.
Hal heads outside to take the call and is asking Bill what he wants and how was he even able to get his contact info. Bill tells him that he got his number from the police because, well, he has news. Aunt Ida died in what was described to him as a freak accident. And Bill needs to go through her belongings because he is the next of kin, which is funny because earlier in the film, no, Hal needs to go through his belongings because Bill earlier was like, "I'm the next of kin." And now there's, like, actually something that needs to be done. And he's like, "no, you're the next of kin. You take care of it."
Yeah, of course. Now that there's, like, responsibility on that title. Yeah.
Yeah. Hal refuses because this is his week with Petey and he's not going to throw that away over this. And at the end of the day, Bill basically is like, "you need to go over there and make sure that it isn't there, you know?" So Hal's been out by the pool while he's been on this phone call when a woman comes out in a robe, and she slowly takes off her robe. And of course, she's wearing this, like, very revealing bikini. And it distracts Hal a little bit. And he snaps out
of it. As if he's a grown man, as if he's never seen a woman in a bikini before. Like, come on now. The monkey might be back, sir. Let's lock in.
Literally, right? We're talking about the monkey. There's a woman in bikini. No.
Yeah.
Oh my God. He goes back to his conversation with Belle, and we get some suspicious shots here, right? Uh-huh. We get a shot of a hose leaking some water onto the ground. The ground is wet. And we see the AC unit rumbling on the roof. So Bill and Hal are just going back and forth, kind of arguing about what they're going to do. And eventually Bill's like, you need to go find it and hold on to it so that nobody turns the key. He keeps using Petey against him too, which kind of pisses Bill off, like saying like, you need to protect him, blah, blah, blah. But while this argument is happening, the woman is heading over to the diving board of the pool, getting ready to jump in.
To her death.
Maybe. Bill basically ends this call by telling Hal that he needs to go get the monkey, and then he just hangs up. He hangs up the phone. Suddenly, the AC unit on the roof begins to really rumble, and then it starts falling off the roof. It hits the ground with a crash as sparks cover the ground, and we see the most cartoonish bolt of electricity traveling along the ground as it hits the hose that's pouring water into the pool.
Right.
And before Hal can do anything to stop her, the woman dives into the pool and is immediately electrified and blown up as her body parts are thrown all over the back pool area. Blood everywhere, guts everywhere, chunks everywhere. One of her legs even flies across the pool and hits Hal. Just her leg, just intact leg. You know, it's like, I can't, I know I keep saying it, but like the Final Destination is so, it's so Final Destination. It's insane.
It's like instead of death, like being the presence itself, it's like the monkey is the presence and it's just Final Destination, literally.
It really is. It really is. Hal heads back to his hotel room. He screams into a pillow a few times, which like valid. I guess. And he then wakes up Petey and tells him like, we gotta go. He's stumbling over his words, and Petey's like, what? It's the middle of the night. Are you high? I'm going back to bed. Hal suddenly loses it and just screams, we gotta make like eggs and scramble. It's like, oh, okay, call back.
Yep.
Petey isn't gonna ask any more questions, so off they go. So they actually just end up pulling up to another motel. And when Hal parks the car, he apologizes to Petey, saying that his aunt just died. He just got a phone call about it. He's got to go take care of the stuff there. And he's just really stressed out.
Yeah.
And Petey's like, well, I'll come with you and I can help you clean it up. But Hal insists that he does it himself. He doesn't want to subject Petey to all this depressing shit, as he puts it.
I hope Petey doesn't die like one of the Final Destination deaths. I will actually be upset over that.
Valid, yeah. Petey cuts him off, saying he knows about the adoption. So Hal can either choose to just cut him off now, or they can spend the little time they actually have left together. So the next morning, Hal and Petey do pull up to the old house together. And
yeah, how do you say no to that? Like, you have to take
it. I know.
Although I think as a dad, I would like fill him in on the situation and be like, okay, well, this is what's fucking happening. So you need to choose whether you want to risk being around me right now.
Right, right. Even like, he's going to look at you like you're insane, but I feel like you got to try.
Yeah.
You know, the for sale sign is actually like still out front and still covered in blood. And they just kind of like plopped a traffic cone over the spot where Aunt Ida shoved her face into the post. So just cover that up. It's not there. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Hal looks over to Petey in the passenger seat and is like, okay, you're just going to wait in the car while I do this. And of course, Petey's like, no, like what? I'm here. Like, I'm not going to sit in the car. Suddenly, the two of them are jump scared by a very done up young to middle-aged woman popping in front of Hal's driver's side window. Hal rolls down the window, and the woman very excitedly introduces herself as Barbara and tells them that, oh, your brother Bill mentioned that you'd be coming. Now, of course, Petey hears this and shoots Hal a look because Hal said he had no siblings. And they make like a whole comedic moment of this where like she keeps being like, your brother Bill? Bill, your brother? And he's like, yep, I heard you. And like, it's just like over the top.
Yeah.
So Barbara leads Hal into the house and shows him around. And she mentions that they had an estate sale the other day and they were able to make over $100, which she's so proud of.
Oh, good.
She told him that they had the estate sale on Sunday because ever since Monday, well, things have been really messy around here. So at first I thought the estate sale happened after the aunt died, but I think it happened before, which confused me timing-wise of everything, the way it was.
Yeah, it would make sense for it to happen before, but like the way they're unraveling the events is a little confusing.
It's all over the place because she says like it must have been Sunday because Monday is when things got messy because she says on Monday it was your aunt. And we flash to a shot of her head on fire. Tuesday, well, on Tuesday, that was Mitch. We flash to a shot of Mitch stuck underneath a lawnmower. The day after that was Bert. We flash to a shot of Bert using some kind of coffee machine that suddenly spurts hot steam onto his face, causing it to essentially melt off.
Okay.
And then finally, Nancy. Flash to a shot of Nancy putting her ball in on the green, and when she leans down to retrieve the ball, a snake pops out of the hole and straight into her neck. So, you know, every day since Monday, a new local has just died under some strange circumstances.
It's weird that, like, it's been 25 years of nothing, and then all of a sudden it's back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, where has it been? Yeah, because, like, clearly it has the ability to teleport and, like, whatever. Yeah. So, like, where was it all this time?
Right.
So Hal asks if they can go check out the other closet, because I guess they have two closets in this house. Mm-hmm. And Barbara says, of course, follow me. They make their way to the closet, but when Barbara goes to open it, it seems like it's been locked, which she doesn't remember doing. She begins to look through her keys to see if she has the one for this door, and Hal takes the time to ask her if she remembers a wind-up monkey at the estate sale. Barbara says she doesn't remember anything of the sort, and she keeps trying different keys on the door, but none of them seem to be the right one. As she continues to try the keys, we can hear a faint bit of circus music.
Oh, no. Okay. What? Don't stop like that. Do you hear circus music?
dead as I thought I just heard music as soon as I said that. I was like, oh, my God, maybe it's the train. I'm dead serious. I swear to God, I just heard something. I'm not joking. That
I
was
heard
so freaky.
Nothing. That was by that, you then. What the hell?
I don't hear anything now. That was so weird. I heard like twinkle. Like twinkle music.
Ew!
That's insane. What? I just panicked.
I'm still panicking. Don't die.
All right. If you see a monkey, like, let me know.
Just imagine the package. The package you opened today on stream. It's the monkey.
It's literally the monkey. That would be horrifying. Oh my God. Whoa. That was so weird. Sorry. So anyway, we hear a bit of fate. Circus music start to creep in. Mm-hmm. And it's actually not clear if Hal can hear it. Like, it seems like he can, but it's also unclear if it's, like, environmental or, like, sound design, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Because he starts to act weird because he's like, maybe we can just go downstairs. But, oh, no, Barbara found the right key. She turns the lock and opens the closet door. Inside, a shotgun lays propped up against the wall. But unlocking the door seems to have disturbed it because it slowly falls forward and Hal
screams.
Oh,
my God.
Before he can do anything, the gun falls forward and goes off perfectly to blast a shell through Barbara's head, and her blood and her brain guts cover the room. This is a very bloody movie. There's a lot of blood
in
this film.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what's the gore like? Is it like really, really over the top gimmicky, or is it like realistic?
I think it's over the top gimmicky.
Okay, yeah. Like, the things that are happening are not realistic, but like, how does it look?
It looks kind of silly, and I will say, like, most of it is from, like, a distance. It's not like you're getting close up to, like, the bodies and, like, seeing that. Like, it's just, like, we see the explosion, we see the red go everywhere, but then we never see her body again kind of vibes.
Okay.
So, like, it doesn't show too much in that sense. But there's always an exaggerated amount of blood.
Yeah.
Just, they like, so much freaking blood. They were stocked up. Downstairs, Petey's just kind of been wandering around downstairs. And, like, he removes one of his earbuds because he's like, oh, I think I heard something. Like, a shotgun going off upstairs. Like, you know, no biggie. And he calls up. He's like, is everything okay up there? Hal calls back down to tell him everything's fine as he pulls the tip of Barbara's index finger out of his mouth.
Oh, my God.
He's like, ew.
That is, oh, my God, ew. I don't like that. Like, I don't even like that with, like, alive people. You know when people try to like be sexy in movies and they like put a finger in someone's mouth? I hate it. It's so gross to me. Oh,
dude, so I can't wait for you to watch that one scene in Sinners.
Oh no. Oh God, it's gonna be the scariest film I've seen all year.
It really is. You're not gonna be able to handle it.
Okay, dead finger out of mouth. We're just trying to stay chill for our child. Yeah,
everything's chill.
Yeah.
So we fade into a shot of like red and blue flashing lights up against the trees outside. Multiple emergency vehicles are parked outside the house and a crowd has started to form as well. Inside, an officer recounts Hal's story with him. He was just standing there, hands to himself. As this tragedy unfolded, he had no part in it. The officer informs him that he's going to have to stay in town till they get this all sorted out, though. Hal tells Petey to go wait in the car while he wraps things up here. And outside, Barbara's body is now being wheeled out of the house. And a group of cheerleaders stand in the crowd outside and they begin cheering as we hear someone shout, "They're bringing the body out."
They weren't like in form, right? There wasn't like a chant, like a cheer chant.
No, I mean, they were in their uniforms. They had their pom-poms. They were done up and they were just like, okay. Woo!
They were wooing. Okay, okay. That's still wild, but I thought you were about to be like, they started going like, give me a D, give me an E, give me an A, T-H, death. Like, I wouldn't put it past this movie.
No, like, they might as well have been doing that. Because, this is my issue. You know what? Because I go into horror comedies and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. And it's like, it's not supposed to. And I'm like, but there's cheerleaders outside the house. Like, why?
No, I know. I know. There's like, there's definitely, it's easy to mess up horror comedy.
Yeah. If you do end up watching this, I'll definitely need to know because I feel like you like horror comedy more than I do. Like, you're a bigger fan of it. So you might like, this might work better for you than it did for me.
Yeah.
So Hal is doing some last checks around the house, I'm assuming looking for the monkey, when the phone rings. He picks it up, and of course it's Bill. And Hal fills Bill in, telling him that the monkey isn't here, so it's got to be with somebody in town somewhere. There have been people dying in strange ways in Casco. Bill tells Hal that he needs to go back to the hotel and await his single. Oh my God. Oh, wait, he's dropping a single.
And this was all promo for a new song that you can find linked below on Spotify.
Yes, he's waiting for his single. Single, whichever one makes you happier works. So Hal's like, what the fuck? Oh my God, not again. What the fuck do you mean you're single? No.
It always can just keep going.
It can. And then he pauses. Like, so he's like, what do you mean you're single? And he pauses and he's like, wait, Bill, are you like living in town? But Bill just hangs up the phone.
Okay, mysterious.
Hal whips out a phone book and looks to see if he can find a Bill Shelbourne listed. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't find one. So I don't ask me. Maybe there's a reason. I don't know why, but he's like, oh, let me go look under the M's. And he finds a phone number for a Mrs. Monkey. Like, I don't know how he knew to look there, but
okay.
But there's a Mrs. Monkey. So, of course, he's going to call Mrs. Monkey up.
Yep.
Nobody picks up, but he does get a voicemail machine. And the machine says as follows. Hello. If this is in regard to my ad, I'm happy to report that my quest for finding my beloved toy monkey is over. Thank you for calling and be safe out there. And yes, it is Bill's voice that we hear saying
what
this.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Why? What are you doing?
Right? What are you doing? So Hal's face, of course, he turns to shock as intense music kicks in and we get close-ups of the key being turned, followed by each of the insane deaths in town. And we cut to a close-up of the voicemail machine and pan over to see Bill sitting up against a wall in the dark in what appears to be a very cluttered room. The music gets real evil sounding and the look on Bill's face is also giving evil. And the shot fades to an overhead shot of the well. So we're going to do our second check-in here.
Oh, man.
Before I get into this part.
I mean, it was a lot of random people. I mean, at this point, it's like you cannot evade the monkey's will.
Right.
Like, you can't.
Exactly.
So I guess it's just another clean 10. Like, it's the same shit that was from the first act where it's like these people are dying and they can't help it because of the monkey, but our main character is not a victim yet. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're 100%. But sure, I'll do another 10%.
Right. Exactly. I didn't even put a score check number because it's like, I don't feel like this one, it's just kind of like we have to talk about it at the end kind of vibes.
Yeah. I'm going to be surprised if that's really what it is, what they're showing us right now, where like Bill is crazy and he went and got the monkey and is going on like using it to be on a murder rampage. I'm going to be surprised if we don't have another twist explaining and it's different from what it seems right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Okay. We are now going to meet voiceover Bill, which, by the way, Bill and they're also both played by Theo James, which makes sense.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So he says, at the very moment you slipped from my fingers, I suddenly knew the terrible truth about everything, that my dumb shit brother had turned your key and killed my mom. Now we learn that Bill actually went back to retrieve the monkey from the well soon after they threw it down there. But it was already gone. The only thing left behind was the key itself, which Bill took as a sign that the monkey would make its way back to him someday. Bill waited and waited and waited until one day he was sitting in a Chinese restaurant alone. He opened his fortune cookie and it said, "Turn the key and see what happens." From that moment, he saw the monkey everywhere that it wasn't. In the clerk behind the counter, in the stripper on the pole, the monkey was coming back to help Bill seek his revenge. He knew it.
Okay, I think maybe it's time to take some meds.
Might be. therapy, you know, there's a lot of options.
Yeah.
A lot of options. So he begins to search in places he thought he might find the monkey, but he always came up empty-handed. But then he came up with an idea while breaking into his aunt's house one night. I guess he did this sometimes, was searching for the monkey. He decided he would prepare for the monkey's return by reworking his childhood funeral suit. He takes the suit from his aunt's house, brings it home, whips out his sewing machine, getting to work. And it's a special looking suit. It contains the original pieces of the suit from when he was a kid, but he also adds like a flame pattern from some of his other clothing that he wore as a kid. Yeah, he did that.
Yeah, do what makes you feel confident.
Do what makes you feel good, buddy. Listen.
Yeah, I don't
this
know.
This movie is so weird. Like, I don't know what to do with this problem.
Yeah.
So one day, he finally comes across the yard sale like ad, and like at his aunt's house, right? He sees
right.
it. He's this, you know, this guy, this other guy goes and gets it, calls him because of his ad, blah 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 blah. Eventually, he gets the monkey.
Right.
So now we cut to when he first meets the monkey, like for the first time since childhood, and he looks at the monkey, looks him dead in the eye, and says, "I trust your flaming sword of righteousness will cut the foul air and smite the right person. And I know you know exactly who I'm talking about." And he turns the key.
Okay. So he's just out here trying to kill his brother.
Mm-hmm.
But literally is like just working his way through anyone yeah. until he can get there.
Pretty much.
What if you just like shot your brother instead?
I was thinking the same thing.
Don't recommend at the end of the day, like, don't kill anyone. But with his line of thinking, like, he just wants to kill his brother. So why are you killing all these other people in the process?
A short story, short story, short story.
Yes.
Made film. Short story, made film.
Yes. We take deep breaths.
Take deep breaths and we go, oh, good job. Yes. That's so good. Now we cut back to our old buddy, Dwayne. Remember him? Our vaping, yeah. like, manager guy. So he goes to take a hit on his vape. But he simultaneously steps on, like, the up end of, like, a hoe, I think it is. And it hits mm-hmm. him in the face, forcing his entire vape down his throat. And, like, we could see, like, the outline of it in his neck. And then he dies.
Okay. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. It's cute.
Let me cross him off.
So back at Bill's house / secret lair, Thrasher is now at the front door. And he rings, like, into Bill and, like, is talking through an intercom. And he asks Bill if he can have the monkey back because it reminded him of his dad.
Oh.
This is literally the only reason that he wants the monkey back.
Okay.
But Bill's like, oh, hell no. Like, you can't have this monkey back because obviously it means a lot to Bill too. Yeah. So Thrasher goes home. He's pissed. But he goes into his closet and he finds his dad's old police uniform. And he also finds a small pistol and some bullets.
Oh.
So we see him find that stuff and we cut away. We cut back to the motel. And Petey and Hal have been fighting. Like, they honestly have been, like, bickery the whole film. Like, understandably, like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And Petey goes in to the bathroom and closes the door. Hal takes this time to give Bill a call. Hal tells Bill that he knows he has the monkey and he needs to stop turning the key.
Mm-hmm.
Bill's like, nah. So okay. Hal's Bill's like, nah. Great. So Hal tells him he's not even worried about himself. He's just worried about Petey. He doesn't want Petey to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill proposes an idea. He has no intention in stopping. So if Hal wants Petey to be safe, why doesn't he just bring Petey over here so Petey can turn the key? So then he's guaranteed not to die.
Okay, so we did decide that that is real. I mean, we don't know that yeah. for sure, though. Do we know that for sure?
I don't think we do.
Okay.
I think it's just kind of like we assume that.
Yeah.
But, like, at first I was like, why would Bill even offer this? But it also, like, it makes sense because then I think it would have a higher chance of killing Hal.
Right, because you're right there.
And it's, like, it's also, like, about who's close to you, I think, is kind of the vibe. So, like, he's closer I guess, to Hal at this point in his life. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
So Bill proposes this and then just says that Hal can call him back when he's made his decision, and then he hangs up the phone. Petey comes out of the bathroom and they hear a knock on the motel room door. Hal looks through the peephole to see Thrasher in his little police outfit. And Thrasher goes, "Open the door. It's the motherfucking police." And Hal's like, "Whoa, okay." And he opens the door. And when Thrasher like gets through the doorway, he immediately whips out his pistol and like holds it up to Hal.
My God.
He demands that Hal grab his keys and tells him that they're going to go for a little drive. Now that there's a gun involved, you know, Hal kind of has to comply. So yep. Thrasher directs Hal where to drive, and they pull up outside a very old, decrepit building with some lights flickering up on the second floor. Hal's like, "Where are we?" And Thrasher looks at him confused and is like, "Don't pretend like you don't know. This is your brother's place." And Hal explains that they're estranged. And Thrasher's like, "Oh, shit, man, that sucks." He then directs his attention to Petey and tells Petey that he's going to go inside, talk to his uncle, and get the monkey. Petey is, of course, like, "What the fuck is, like, happening right yeah. now? Like, yep. what? Like, a toy monkey?" And Hal was like, "It's not a toy. It's actually evil. I was going to tell you about it when you got older." Petey's not taking any of this very seriously, and they're just going back and forth yelling about the monkey. When Thrasher finally is like, "The kid needs to go crawl through the doggy door in the back and get me my monkey, or I'm going to kill you both."
Oh, my God.
Hal isn't happy about it, but he doesn't have a choice.
Can we just, what's happening with Thrasher that he just is this random psychopath who like has a sentimental attachment to this monkey and is willing to kill people over it?
I cannot wait to read the story and find out if there's any fucking reason for this man to be here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because his side story like has such a massive impact on this film, and it doesn't make any sense.
Like, who are you?
Literally, I don't know. It's a random man that saw an ad for a monkey, went and bought it and sold it, and now he's like, "I need the monkey back."
Yeah.
Why? He's so weird. Oh my God. So Petey, don't worry, we're almost done. So Petey makes his way to the back door and through the doggy door, and he's inside. He creeps around this horrifying abandoned building type fortress that Bill has made his home, and he suddenly steps on a string that's taut, like about an inch off the ground, mm-hmm. and it triggers an axe that swings across the hall, narrowly missing Petey. Mm-hmm. So we got to watch out for some booby traps around here. He almost steps on another one as he makes his way up the stairs, but pulls his foot away just in time. Like, he does push down on it, but like not all the way. Mm-hmm. And he looks up to see three swords hanging from the ceiling that would have likely come down and killed him. He continues up the stairs, and I think that little bit of push that Petey did triggered the start of like a Rube Goldberg type contraption he has set up, because this bowling ball starts rolling. It's like making its way through some tracks.
Oh my God, a throwback.
Yeah, it is a throwback. Out in the car, Hal notices a... This is, you know, no, stop. Okay.
You're like, you like, know what? It's not worth it. Let's end it here. Bye, everyone.
This is the end of the episode. So out in the car, Hal notices a large hornet's nest in one of the trees up ahead. Thrasher sees him looking at it, and he notices it too. And he's like, "Oh, I'll put your brights on it." So he does. And it's like a very active hive. So that's there. And I'm sure that won't come into play at all. So
no.
We're going to go back inside now because we need to look at that hornet's nest. So back inside, Petey's made his way into Bill's main living space within the building. Bill's acting like a crazy man talking to the monkey when Petey makes himself known. Bill says it's such a nice surprise to see Petey here. Petey asks Bill if he's okay. And Bill thinks on this for a moment and says, "It's been a long time since someone's ever asked me that. And no, I'm not okay." Which, like, sir, we know. Like, yeah. we're aware.
And now is not the time for the pity party.
We don't care at the moment. You're killing tons of people.
Yeah.
He tells Petey that his beloved favorite childhood toy monkey doesn't seem to be working anymore, and he's really upset about it. He asks if maybe Petey could try fixing it for him. Now, Petey looks at the monkey and says, "Oh, so this is it. This is the thing that's been messing everyone up." Mm-hmm. Bill's like, "Well, how could it? It's just a monkey. It's just a toy. Turning the key is something that we Shelbournes have been doing for generations. It's a tradition."
Why does he talk like this? He's been talking weird as an adult, like, the whole time. And I'm just like,
oh, he's so weird.
What happened to you? Like, why? What is the reason that you talk this way now? Like, you did not talk this way as a child or, like, teen or whatever.
Yeah, he just, like, goes crazy, I guess. And I think it's funny that he calls it, like, the generations. Like, you and your dad turn the key, bro. That's not generations. That's not tradition.
Yeah. I'm like more hung up on like his newfound vocabulary. Like, I know you're crazy, but I'm talking about like the literal words that he uses. Yeah. Is like, where did this come from?
No, he's like this. He's like giving over the top evil villain.
Yeah.
Like, that's the energy he gives.
Like, you'd find he belongs in Phineas and Ferb, like not here.
Yes. This is Doofenshmirtz. Yeah. This is 100% Doofenshmirtz. Like, you're not wrong. So Petey's like, you know, what does the monkey do? And all Bill says to this is turn the key. See what happens. So Petey does.
Like, why? Like, obviously don't. But okay.
Like, don't. Your uncle's insane. Like, maybe yeah. Stay away. So the monkey widens its lips again, shows its teeth, and begins to play. Well, outside, I don't know what might happen out here, but outside, the hornet's nest starts weighing the branch down that it's on. I don't know. It suddenly got really heavy. It starts getting weighed down. And Thrasher's in the backseat of the car, and he's like, oh, this cop hat is so itchy. And he starts scratching his head with the hand that's holding the gun. He's like scratching it with the gun.
Oh my God.
So, of course, he accidentally shoots the gun, and the bullet goes through the windshield and into the hornet's nest, right? So, they don't notice this right away, though. Like, they just are like, oh, don't shoot the gun.
You didn't look in the direction that you just accidentally shot a gun. Okay.
No, it takes a minute to get there. Eventually, Hal realizes that there's one small hole in the windshield and that the hole leads directly into the nest. Now, we zoom all the way up to this nest and we see like one single little hornet like pop its head out. He looks kind of mad. He looks a little upset.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
Valid.
No, you know who I'm picturing is like the main bee from Bee Movie?
Oh, yeah. No, that's him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that bee. Exactly. Copy-paste. I can't believe you figured that out. Spoiler.
He doesn't
alert,
do a lot of cameos these days. It's kind of a big deal.
The plot twist is actually that this is the Bee Movie.
The sequel.
The sequel to the Bee Movie. So what's his name? Barry? Is that his name?
Who is Barry? What?
The bee from the Bee Movie.
Oh.
Is that his name?
I actually don't remember his name. It might be. That sounds a little familiar.
Okay, so we're going to go with Barry. So Barry suddenly takes off zooming toward the car, followed by about, I'm not exaggerating, there's got to be more than 1,000 other bees, right?
Oh my God.
They fly straight toward the car, and they go through the hole in the windshield directly into Thrasher's mouth. Literally every last one of them. They just, all of them. Right into his face until Thrasher's like face is bursting like apart and hornets are making their way back through the skin on his face. And Hal's like slowly like just leaving the car. It's kind of funny. Like, okay, I'm gonna go. So Thrasher's body's like twitching and doing weird shit in the backseat. Mm-hmm. And Hal runs away. Hal heads inside and he's calling for Petey. And when Bill hears this, he quickly urges Petey to turn the key again before Hal shows up. Petey refuses, so Bill slaps him across the face and grabs the monkey. He scolds the monkey, saying that he's done asking nicely. Kill my dumb shit brother and do it now. I don't know why he doesn't turn the key here, but like he doesn't, right? Instead, he just tries to like force the monkey's arm down, but it's fighting back now. Like, uh-huh. The monkey's really strong.
Uh-huh.
And like he's fighting the monkey, and then he suddenly, Bill gets like flung across the room by the monkey somehow, and Petey takes this time to run out of the room where he runs into Hal, who's trying to get through the doggy door at the moment. Now the monkey's on the floor. This is so back and forth, it's such a mess. But
yeah,
the monkey's sitting on the floor looking right at Bill, who is writhing in pain on the floor, and the monkey raises its right arm into the air and bangs down on the drum. He starts drumming slowly at first, but then he gets faster and faster and faster, like unrealistically fast, and then stops with one arm still raised. Everything goes quiet until Bill hears a scream and an explosion come from the distance. He looks out the window and sees that multiple buildings in the vicinity are on fire, and a plane is actively crashing into the ground a mile or so away.
Oh, my God. Okay. Okay. He can do more than one at a time now.
I guess so. I guess that's what's happening.
Make him mad. Mass murder.
The monkey continues, like, making music and stuff. And then some skydivers come plummeting through the roof. Oh, my. A bride and a groom.
Okay. Wait. Were the bride and the groom also the skydivers?
Yes. 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 some skydivers and a bride and a groom that just fell from the sky. At this point, who knows?
Got it.
So this is when Hal and Petey come running into the room to see what all this chaos is about. And Hal immediately gets on Bill saying he was really trying to kill him, wasn't he? And Bill's like, well, yeah. And naturally, Hal's got to be like, well, why did you do it? Mm-hmm. And Bill says, because you killed my mom. The music gets all sad and somber and sentimental.
Oh, here we go.
And they stare at each other, right? And Bill goes on to say that he knows too, somehow, that Hal was trying to kill Bill with it when they were kids. But it didn't work, and it killed his mom instead.
Mm.
Hal tries to get through to Bill, saying it wasn't his fault. It wasn't anybody's fault what happened to them when they were kids. He goes on to say, I'm sorry your mom died. It fucking sucks. I know how you feel. She was my mom, too. Bill goes, oh, yeah. I guess she was. Never thought about it like that. Innocent mistake. Makes sense, though. We're brothers. It's like this big comedic bullshit moment, right? Where he's like, oh, you're right, we are brothers. We do have the same mom.
No. You know how you said, like, maybe you'll like it more because you're more into horror comedy. That shit is not funny. It's not funny. What the fuck? That's so stupid.
So Bill apologizes to Hal. And they continue to have their sweet moment where Hal tells him that he wishes they could have been there for each other more when they were kids. What do you say, Bill? He says. Brothers again? Bill agrees and reaches out his hand.
Okay, but then Bill spontaneously combusts.
Bill reaches out his hand and he does he does his little pullback thing. And he's like, oh, sorry, I'm kidding. Then he does it again, like the fake out again. And he's like, okay, are you going to shake my hand or not? Third time, they actually do shake hands.
Okay, we got there.
We did get there. So Bill looks at Petey and Hal and says, you guys on a road trip? Wish I could have done that with someone at least once. Hal's like, well, come with us. From behind them, the monkey finally lowers its arm. It's been raised this entire conversation. They all turn to look, and those swords that were hanging from the ceiling, they come down now, and they trigger that bowling ball from before into a cannon. The cannon falls forward, shoots the bowling ball straight into Bill's head, decapitating him. So you're right.
Yeah.
Bill's gone.
Yes, I did figure that Bill would die, okay?
You figured that. Yes. So we get a lovely shot of the bowling ball wedged into the wall with Bill's face parts all squished into the wall around it. And fun fact, this is the same exact bowling ball that we talked about before.
Oh my God, that's kind of cute. Childhood. Like, that's kind of sentimental, yeah.
Yeah, and it does have, like, Lois engraved in it, which was their mom's name. So
it's almost like she killed him.
In a way, it kind of is.
As well, yeah.
Yeah, kind of love that. Mm-hmm. So we cut to Petey and Hal driving in the car again, and it's, like, daytime now. And they're driving through absolute carnage. Mm-hmm. The town is destroyed. They drive by a man impaled by a surfboard and a woman running down the street with a baby carriage that's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And Hal's like, so what do you want to do now? Petey says, well, we got to decide to do with the monkey. And Hal says that they're going to hold on to it, keep it close so that nobody else can get their hands on it, and they just won't turn the key.
Mm-hmm.
They pull up to a red light, and a ghostly woman riding a ghostly horse trots on by. Now,
what do you mean, a ghostly?
Okay.
what are you talking about?
They make this reference to the whole movie. Like, they make it like three times, talking about like a pale horse. It's clearly a reference to something, like, not in the movie that I don't get. Something about a pale horse ridden by death. Like, I didn't get it. Because it's, like, a whole moment, and, like, he stares at it, and I'm like, I don't get what's happening right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, it goes by, and Hal continues driving down the road, and he tells Petey they should go dancing. Petey's like, what the fuck? And he's like, it comes from your grandmother. Like, you know, she did that. Mm-hmm. So the car disappears down the long road. As a bus comes by in, like, the perpendicular direction with all of the cheerleaders hanging out the window cheering for God knows what, right? So they're like, woo!
There's so much to cheer about right now.
Yeah. And then from the opposite direction, an 18-wheeler comes flying by from the other side and kills every single one of the cheerleaders.
Oh, good.
And the movie ends.
Okay. Oh, but I was expecting some, like, last-minute gimmick with Hal and Petey dying, but they did survive.
Yeah, they did.
I kind of don't know why.
Listen, I filmed a reaction to this movie, and I don't know if I'm posting it because I usually try to be nice, right? I usually try to be nice.
Yeah.
I got to the end of this movie and I was like, guys, there's nothing good about this film. This film is so bad. There's literally nothing about it that I like. And I'll be honest, like, I think it's pretty rough, but I think it probably works for people who enjoy the comedy genre, maybe.
Maybe. But I mean, I've seen very low, low reviews for this movie. Like, I think it's the general consensus that it's not good. So it could be a fun reaction because sometimes it's fun to like watch someone watch a bad movie because it's just like, LOL, yeah. I know, right? Like, it's validating because it's like, it's so stupid, right? Yes, you know?
Right.
But
my concern is that like, it has a 78 on Rotten Tomatoes. The Letterboxd score is pretty high. Like, I don't understand. The IMDb is 6 out of 10. And I don't know. Like, that's my issue. I don't know what I'm missing. I'm clearly missing something because a lot of people really like this movie.
The way you described it, it did sound frustrating. It's possible that I might enjoy it because, like, tone is everything. And sometimes that can be hard to get across in a podcast format. But I don't know. I kind of lean toward – I think I'm going to end up leaning toward your take on the movie. It had me in the first half, honestly. Like, I thought it was fun in the first half. It was kind of after the 25 years later jump where I was just like, okay, like, this is just stupid now.
Right. It feels like the first half hour is the short story. And then the 25 year later, which is the last hour of the film – so more than half of the film feels like the addition.
Yeah. The intro feels super random as well in hindsight.
Right. And then it doesn't really make sense. I don't know. It feels – to me, it feels like choppy and weird. But it really truly might just be a me problem. Like, I don't want to sit here and be like, oh, objectively, I think it's terrible.
Right.
Because it might be fine to some people.
I'm very curious to see it myself.
Yeah. And then the thing – thing is, for survivability, is also tricky because, like, if you're a victim of the monkey, you're dead. But if you're not a victim of the monkey, you're alive. So.
Well, exactly. Like, that's the thing, too, is I don't know. I mean, if we're going main character energy, it's 100%. And if we're going anything other than main character, it's, like, zero.
Right. So it's, like, is it a 50? Because it's a 50-50 chance, right, that the monkey
right
pick you.
You know what, I think honestly, yeah,
I feel like this might be a good 50.
It's an exact 50% because it is just a flip of a coin as far as whether you're gonna die or not. Yeah,
the monkey's coming up as 32 pages as the short story.
Oh my god. Okay,
I definitely am gonna read it because and like, I just found a PDF of it, so like, I can just read it online.
Yeah,
I would love to read that and then make a comparison and be like, was this one of those things that was good, but then you tried too hard to stretch it?
Do you know if the short story is horror comedy or if it's just horror?
I feel like the thing is, like, with Stephen King, so much of his horror is so outlandish, but I wouldn't call it comedy.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, just the title for a short story, horror story, being the monkey, it's like, what?
Yeah.
That in itself is a little bit comedic.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because it's like, if you go to the Wikipedia article for it, The Monkey is a 1980 horror short story by Stephen King featuring a cursed cymbal-banging monkey toy. I don't know why they changed it to a drum. I mean, maybe it was just easier to work with, like, visually than just having the cymbals.
Yeah.
Like, playing the drum maybe is more visually interesting.
And it's, like, nicer on the ears, I guess. You know, playing drums and sound design over the cymbals. Well, 50%. This was an experience.
Yeah, I knew it would be. I knew it was going to be something. But hopefully it was somewhat entertaining, you know?
Yeah.
We always aim for entertainment here. Thank you guys so much for hanging out, for listening. Be sure to check us out over on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. And in our link in our bio over there, you can access our Discord where you can submit your scores and let us know, would you survive?